And we're back. We're back, we're back, we're back, we're back.
Yeah, I remember seeing that movie when I was a kid.
Yep. So, it's the Blunt Force Gamers at the end of the month episode. And I don't have any clue what we're doing. I know, Darth Blasmus, you had an idea. What's it?
Well, for the past year or so, I've been trying to invest in building a gaming PC. I've had to put it off several times because real life happens.
Damn that real life bullshit.
Yeah, it happens. But I know both of you guys have gaming devices that are proper as the computer gaming master race. You guys have logged in more hours than most of my awake life.
Damn straight.
But you know, this is something a lot of gamers really, I think, there's plenty of stuff out on the internet, and you look up stuff, tells you this, that, and the other thing, but I feel like if we have a discussion, one, it'll help me figure out some stuff, and two, I think our listeners might like to get our insights.
Okay. Well, then we're going to move on to doing some PC Master Race stuff right after our customary intro.
Oh, goody, we're back again at that.
Feeling tired at the gaming table? Want to hear foul-mouthed jackasses poke fun at gaming companies when they screw up? Want an honest, street-level opinion from a team of gamers that call it like it is? Then Blunt Force Gamers may be the podcast for you.
Listener discretion advised.
Okay, we're back again at that. Okay, so sitting with me today, it's your host, Game Goblin, with Darth Blasphemous, and once again, Kazarkan.
Dun, 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 dun,
oh, come on, guys, do your intros.
The Lord Dragon is here.
Hola.
Hola. Bitch, hola.
Hey, I'm not stealing from the radio guys again.
Yeah, neither am I, because I made the mistake of saying that in a Mexican store.
Wow.
Yeah, it was the old Mexican store that used to be down on the corner by the road with the mall. Mm. Yeah, I was in there grabbing something to eat. I'm like, hola, bitch, hola! Then I turned my head and realized that there was a couple of Mexican women looking at me, not too happy.
Yeah.
All right, so getting on the computing.
So
let's start with
rigs.
The computer rigs. I think the most important thing is, well, other than processing power, really, is cooling. As an endurance player, I could sit around for an entire day playing games that require a lot of graphic, like robust graphic stuff's going on, like Skyrim jacked up to the hilt, or Fallout 4 or any other game, or The Witcher. You know, lots of things that require a lot of power on the graphic side, and of course the cards are going to get fucking hot, so cooling is really important to me personally.
I'll actually second that. And the reason I'll second that is because I have had a graphics card warp from the heat that was generated inside my computer while it was trying to do its job. I've actually had this happen twice, yeah. And since picked up a graphics card that is triple fanned and just plagued to the gills on cooling there.
You know, here's a question. Fans versus liquid cooled. What are your guys' thoughts? Because like I looked into it, and I'm leaning towards the liquid-cooled side, but I would do a solo liquid-cooled just for my chip.
And I would do a combo, personally. My system right now only has the liquid intercooler and the onboard fan for the graphics card, or I should say onboard fans. But if I had my way, I would toss a shit ton more fans in there for cooling.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as liquid intercooler goes, my system's held up for almost 2 years now, and I've had no problems. The last cooler, yeah, it developed bubbles, but that was another issue entirely. But the new cooler I've had for almost a year now, and no problems.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they've come a long way with water cooling.
Yeah.
Like, early on, back when I was still in high school, like a youngling, I was really worried about...
Dude, high school was 3 years ago for you!
Fuck off, it was 8.
Wait, what year did you graduate?
I'm not going to say that on the podcast.
Sorry, dude.
You starting high school was 8 years ago.
No.
Anyway, back when you first started.
Back when I first started, I was worried that if I was you know, playing liquid cooled, that it would burst. Mm-hmm. And there goes the computer. The machine is gone at that point. There's very little that you can do. You might be able to save the hard disk or something. But they've come a long way with it. They're very stable, and unless they develop bubbles, like Goblin said, they're pretty good. As for, you know, reliving that, like, I've actually done some research on it. Water-cooled systems really only go crack if you start overclocking, and that's not exactly something everyone's going to do.
There's the only other real issue with liquid cooling is if the liquid intercooler setup happens to die while you are away from keyboard, say you're in bed,
at work,
you're out camping or whatever. So you're going to be turning your computer on and off more frequently if that's a worry. Like, I leave mine on constantly and I've had no problems with it, but there is, especially on the lower end, cooling systems where you're going to want to shut off your computer when it's not in use.
Yeah.
And, you know, that actually segues rather nicely into storage. Mm-hmm. So your hard drives. There's, like, three major avenues that you can go for long-term storage.
Mm-hmm.
The first is a solid-state drive. A solid-state drive is going to have boot times like you would not believe. Like, I've seen, you know, Stellaris, for instance, is a very big game. I play it every Saturday, and I try to stream it, but need to download the programs again. So I'm using a new laptop. But, you know, like on my old computer, which is running a standard hard drive, you know, your old school, you know, high capacity but lower initial read, to, you know, on my old rig, it takes 10 minutes to boot between the launcher and the actual game. I launch it on my laptop and it takes me a minute tops. So that's the difference between a hard drive and a solid state.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also a thing called SATA, which allows you to enhance the read and storage capacity for hard drives by creating a virtual grid of them. Mm-hmm. So you take several SATA hard drives, you raid them all together, so they're all one, as far as the computer can see, one gigantic drive.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, just to be safe, you redundantly store it, so you've got a duplicate in case it all goes tits up.
Okay.
Yeah. Computers is kind of easy. I mean, all you gotta do really is, when you're putting a rig together, is look at what's out there, look what's in your budget, look what games you want to play, and then go from there.
Right. And, you know, like, I'm actually in the process of building a war rig,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, it sounds like what Blasphemous is trying to do over the course of several years' time, it sounds like.
I want to do months, but I got to get a second job.
I mean, we can discuss that off the podcast.
It's an important thing, budgeting, because you've got your income, you've got X amount of disposable, and in this day and age, it's really hard to hold down one job and be able to afford to live.
And at that, you know, when you do get your new computer built, you're going to want to have, like mine, when I got mine built, and the one before that, I wanted upgrade options.
Mm-hmm.
So that way, further down the road, I could swap components out, or get major overhaul
if needed.
Yes, overhaul is needed. I wanted to get overhauls as needed, and it would not cost me as much to buy a new computer.
Since all you would need is, say, a new graphics card
or
something.
Yeah, if I just need a new graphics card, I could pop the old one out, throw the new one in, do some periodic standard maintenance, and be ready to go.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And that's what I'm going to be doing. This is another thing that you need to keep in mind when you're building a rig. It's called future-proofing. Or at least that's what it's been called in the circles I run.
Future-proofing! Y2K bug!
Well, you're not worried about the Y2K bug so much, but you are worried about exactly what Goblin is. You know, going down the line, there's an understanding that computer parts will become progressively better and better and better at a rate that will, you know, it obsoletes things like every 3 years.
And in some cases, it'll be cheaper. Like, when I got my rig built, 6 months later, a new graphics card came out that was half the price of the one that I bought. And the new graphics card, despite being half the price, was actually more powerful. But at the same token, I could just sit on my thumb, wait, and a year later pick up the same graphics card for even cheaper, and it would still be more powerful than what I've got and more current with the current game system requirements. So as part of future-proofing, I definitely made my system, one of the main things I did was making as much of it modular as possible.
Right.
So I could just pull things out, plug new things in, and keep on trucking. Like, no, there was no problem.
Yeah, and this a lot of that particular power comes from the motherboard that you pick.
Yeah.
Now we're starting to get into part-specific stuff. So the motherboard, what you want to do is you want to have everything cranked up as high as you can go on a motherboard, specifically the motherboard.
Mm-hmm.
Because if everything is cranked up as high as possible, you don't have to replace the entire computer, the motherboard, if there's things down the line that are better. Like, for instance, I could get a cheapo motherboard, and it would be up to the current.
Mm-hmm.
But if I wanted to get the next gen, which is probably coming out within 3 years, I have to get a whole new motherboard in that case.
And yeah. If you buy a pre-built computer, you're looking at a computer lifespan of about
4, 5, 6,
if you're lucky, years of lifespan you're going to have on that computer investment before it's rendered obsolete and junk.
Right, and on the flip side, like the rig I was running, I've had for 10 years that I've kept up to date, and it's been a lot more manageable.
And as far as pre-builds go, too, is
there's nothing wrong with
that. No Dell, no Gateway, no none of that bullshit.
Like, if you're going for one, you know, go for a company that actually markets to gamers. If they're marketing to gamers, like Alienware, Asus, Republic of Gamers, they're fairly robust.
They are fairly robust. Even though Alienware is falling on kind of
harsh.
Yeah, they've pretty much harshed themselves and fallen a bit from grace.
Well,
but
that's
still,
what happens when you price things up to the fucking moon.
Well, there's that, and there's also the other fact. Like, when I got my computer custom built, it was more expensive than going in to get a pre-build, because pre-builds behind the scenes include a fuck ton of bloat.
Yeah.
You're going to get a bunch of crap in there you don't need. It's going to be bloat. And even if you go in there and pick a lot of it out, there's going to be leftover chunks of here and there that's going to slow your system down. So for a pure gaming rig, I mean, if you really want to go super legit, you're going to have to go bare bones basic on what is in the box.
Which is reminds me of a meme I saw where it's the PC guy, and he's got the old beater car, and he's like, well, if I just swap this out, I can get another 100,000 miles out of the car. And then the guy standing next to him's got, you know, one of those new fancy cars, and he's got the Apple logo on, and he's like, oh, sounds like something's wrong. Better get a whole new one. It's pretty much how it is. If you buy pre-built, you're going to have to swap whole system-wide.
Yeah, to an extent.
Modular.
To an extent.
Yeah, there are like, some of the actual tower desktop, those are the ones that actually sit on the floor or beside you,
mm-hmm.
or wherever you're actually positioning it. And they are big, clunky boxes, typically, or relatively large. There are no laptop pieces by any stretch. Those are the ones that are going to have the more modular durability
mm-hmm.
than, say, a laptop. Because a laptop is a chrome-plated bitch to take apart no matter who you're talking about.
Yeah, laptops are just a fucking nightmare. I've been anti-laptop for the most part since I started gaming back on EverQuest. There was people playing on laptops, and if something went wrong with it, it was hell and a nightmare to get shit fixed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like I'm in the same boat. But at the same token, a laptop affords you the variability to just pick up your rig and walk off.
Yeah, so it makes LAN parties a lot easier.
It does.
God,
it
does anyone even do those anymore?
Surprisingly, yes.
Yay! They do.
Yes.
Wow.
Smaller circles, but yes.
I don't know,
like,
that.
For example, I could just go over to the Purple Hippo, you know, headquarters, plunk down and play Overwatch with them. Whenever I felt like...
Yeah, well, you're not a real LAN player because you don't have a milk crate.
I did have a milk crate.
Oh, you did have a milk crate.
I choose not to bring the beast with me anymore.
Okay.
So, it doesn't need to. And, you know, especially because... I was saying to admit this. My new laptop is way better than it right now. But that's just because I bought a current-gen gaming laptop pre-constructed. I did, you know, I'm not going to lie about that. I bought one specifically because, one, it was on sale, and two, it was a good deal. And two, from what I saw out of the specifications and the fact that it's, you know, Republic of Gamers, it's actually doing pretty good, and it's well constructed for the price.
It's still a laptop. It's just a glorified console. PC Master Race!
Yeah, and then there's, you know, then there's, like, the meme. It's the PC Master Race guy and his kid, it looks like. So what made you decide to clean this out? And it's like, to get a new rig. And it's like, oh, well, it's time to do some maintenance. And he opens up the case and, like, the demon spawn tentacles from Cthulhu just start reaching out. And then the next panel is him crying with a flamethrower. His whole house is burning. Just some things.
Just some things. Yeah, so as far as gaming goes, when building a rig, it's pretty simple. Like I said, man, it comes down to the price point of what your budget is, what you're expecting to play, what's available. Mm. And from there, you got to crunch numbers. And if you're lucky enough to find a retailer, like a brick-and-mortar store or something.
Like our good friends.
Like our good friend. Shout out to Paul. If you can find a place that is willing to build a custom rig within your budget that has the power requirements you need, that is going to give you at least 7 years out of your investment minimum, you're pretty much set at that point.
Yeah.
But as far as buying a pre-build system, I've done it in the past, and I fucking hate Hewlett-Packard's with a fucking passion.
Yeah, you easily avoid, I don't even know if Sony still makes laptops. I'm pretty sure they don't.
Yeah.
Oh, they do. Yeah, well, stay away from them.
Yeah, pre-built
Dells
systems.
And HPs. Those are, they're great for offices.
Don't forget about Gateways.
Yeah, they're great
they
for.
They exist.
I don't know if they still exist, but.
I think they got bought.
They're definitely on my shit list. Pre-built systems, especially those ones, the reason that their price is so low is they come with so much crap in there. And it's kind of like dealing with AOL software before, you know, they went tits up. There's a lot of stuff in there that, unless you format the hard drive, you're not going to get it cleaned out.
Yeah.
And even at that, they're really sneaky sometimes with the pre-built systems, and it's kind of a gamble. Because, I mean, yeah, you can buy a pre-built system for, like, $700, take it home, format the hard drive and clean everything out of it, because if you try to do it manually, there will be leftovers.
There will always be leftovers.
There will always
be
leftovers.
Something little and it will just fuck you up.
But some of them, they're really sneaky, because you can take it home and format the hard drive and you may be missing something when you try to reinstall shit.
Mm-hmm.
Or they'll want verification on something that you don't have. So it's kind of like their sneaky way of getting more money out of you if you do format the hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a bit of a gamble when you get a pre-built.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, this is another thing that you're going to have to keep in mind, especially because Windows 10 and their goddamn backstabby bullshit.
Fuck Windows 10.
Fuck Windows 10.
Fuck them in the neck with a chicken bone.
Ooh, chicken bone works too.
Yeah. Chicken, just straight up, fuck them in the neck with a chicken bone. And not going through the standard mouth route.
Right. Moving on. So you also have to keep in mind things like what you're planning to do with it. How you build your rig is going to change if you're going to be doing streaming versus if you're just fucking off playing games or video editing. All three of those are going to take very different setups, especially for the graphics part.
Well, for mine, fortunately, the video editing, I'm able to do that fairly easily, but on my old system, as Kazrakan just pointed out, it was totally legit true. I could game easily for 8 to 10 hours on that system before the cache memory finally said, screw you, dude, reset. But video editing, I was lucky to get 3 or 4 hours before the memory got to the point where it was like, screw you, dude. So you're looking at a bunch of different variables depending on your needs. And if you're building a straight-up gaming rig, it makes things easier when you're doing your research, but... Yeah. Like Kazrakan just pointed out, depending on if you want multi-function, you're going to be looking at more upgrades.
Yeah.
More things that are already at a higher price point.
Yep.
So, you know, it's not just, you know, what you're doing with it and it's what you're playing. It's how long do you plan on doing it? Like, a lot of building your rig is also looking at yourself and going, what do I actually do on this? What will I be doing going forward?
And looking at it from an investment standpoint, from where I was coming from, it was, I have X disposable income, and this is my entertainment value. How long will it stretch my dollar? And, you know, an upfront cost of, say, $1,500, you want to try and get that 7, maybe 8 years out of it.
Yeah, it's kind of like when you're playing a video game. One of the best loosey-goosey mathematical equations I got out of that was a 60-hour game should be playable for 60 hours worth of enjoyment. So my Skyrim game, I'm now down to about, I don't know, 7 cents an hour of enjoyment.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I've played it a lot. And computers, you can kind of use the same thing, you know, as if you're going to be spending 15 grand or 1,500. Yeah. If you're spending $1,500 on a computer, you should be getting at least, you know, X amount of money per day of enjoyment factor out of that computer.
Two jobs, QQ.
Do what? Good job, QQ?
No. Two jobs, QQ. Cry.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so if you're spending $800 on a computer that's going to last you for 5 years versus $1,100 on a computer that's going to last you 7 years, I would go to the 11 every time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I want the most gaming buck out of my system for the money I'm paying, and especially if that $1,100 computer is custom built or has something to it, which means I can pull and plug and play and swap shit out of there. Because the $800 one's probably going to be a pre-built, and it's going to piss me off in 5 years when it goes tits up. Because almost every pre-built I've had has kind of like this weird death timer on it.
Yeah.
It hits a certain point and just the OS gets a weird corruption and the whole fucking thing will die.
Planned obsolescence is a thing, people.
It seems like it because I had two Hewlett Packards in a row die at just around the 5 year mark.
Cars.
Fancy that.
It's also true in cars. I mean, yeah. What?
Yeah, planned obsolescence.
So, you know, with this very concept in mind, just make it so that that planned obsolescence point is as far away from you as you can possibly throw it.
Yep.
And upgrading as you go can be a lot cheaper than having to do one big rebuild, it seems.
Yeah. Like, well, I'm looking at a rebuild that's going to run me probably maybe $2,000.
When I get around to swapping my card out, my graphics card, it's going to run me probably in the $400 to $600 range.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I
guess. You know, and then right now I'm sitting at 2 years on the graphic card that I got, which I spent $500 for, and
good money off it.
I'm making good money, so that's $250 a year, essentially at one day per dollar almost, and, you know, do some weird number stuff. So I'm paying less than a dollar a day to enjoy that graphics card right now.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes around the time that I buy a new graphics card, with the setup that I have, I can just pull the one I've got out of there, slap a Titan X in there, or whatever the new car is going to be. I know Titan X is a bit old now. But that doesn't mean... But what it means is I'm not buying a whole new rig.
Yeah.
So when my graphics card goes, I can swap that out. When one of my hard drives goes, I've got it set up so it's modular. I can just swap that out.
Mm-hmm.
Like when my old intercooler died, I just took it in the shop, swapped that out. And a lot of the rigs out there, especially if you go to like a Best Buy or something, they have so much stuff that's built into the MOBO, you can't swap out. I mean, yes, you can upgrade it, but...
Right, and it's like, even... that's just the biggest thing. It's like, things are cheap because they are cheap.
Yeah.
Like, it sounds like a really corny thing to say, but it's still true. If you buy things that are lower priced, and they're not on sale... Like, if they're just baseline prices lower, you're going to get less out of it. This is especially true with computers.
It's kind of like one of the first not-so-wise sayings I came up with is that shoes are like women. You never go cheap. Because if you go cheap, you're going to wind up with problems real quick.
Mm-hmm.
And computers are a lot the same way. If you go cheap, you're basically buying a toaster that can start smoldering and developing problems real quick.
So here's a saying that my family used a lot. You can get things any combination of three ways. Good, fast, and cheap.
Yeah.
You never get all three. it's good and fast, it ain't going to be cheap. If it's fast and cheap, it ain't going to be good.
Well, it's like my Pinoy homie says, women are like a parking lot. All the good ones are already taken. Wait, how's that deal with computers? Yeah. So, yeah, just, computers are pretty easy. I mean, once you get the first few steps down, in my opinion.
Yeah, and like, really the core thing is going to be the processing power. That's your CPU, your RAM, and your graphics.
Yeah,
those three are going to be the things that really determine
processing power is highly important, and you don't need to go top shelf.
Not always.
You don't always need, like, when I bought mine, everything was a shelf down from top shelf. It was pretty close to top shelf, a lot of it that I was looking at, but I went next shelf down. Yeah, I saved myself a few bucks, and my computer's lifespan is going to be the same as if I went top shelf.
Yeah.
You just got to be smart about your shopping.
Yeah. And that's really just it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I definitely think this is good stuff for people to learn. Like, I'm still trying to work on it, you know. Life keeps getting in the way, but when we're looking at this, we're looking at having fun. And if you're doing solo stuff, I'm sure your build is different than if you're going massive multiplayer. Or if you're looking to do, like, some online D&D stuff, you want to build a bit more of a streaming system, you know?
Yeah.
Because if you're doing, like, Google Play or Google Hangouts or whatever that other one is where it's actually a streaming service just for D&Ding with people across, you know, digital lines.
Oh, like Roll20?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's another way for us to game together as people. And I think this is something important because we're all about gaming. We're gamers. We want to try and break this stuff down because, yes, there's a lot of other people that talk about it online, but I think we have a perspective that works. You know, cause we've got
it works for us for sure, and it may work for somebody else. It may not, but, you know, the more information you gather on a particular topic, the better and more prepared you are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, boiling it down, the steps are do your research. That is research on what you're trying to do, research on yourself, and research on your budget. Follow those three things, and then stick to your budget. That's the next one.
And no pre-builds.
And try to avoid pre-builds. If you're going for something really cheap but powerful, a pre-build is an alright way to go for the short term. It's not that great for the long term, which is what you should be playing for.
A pre-build is kind of like bumming a cigarette. You know, you walk up to a random stranger, and you may get a cigarette, you may not, but even if you do, it's probably not going to be your preferred brand or something you want.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go out and get your own system built, you know, you're getting what you want. You don't have to beg anybody for chump crap. It's going to cost more. It's going to take more work. But in the end result, it's going to be worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're going to have a lot more quality time if you just go your own route, research, and explore. That's pretty much all I can say on the topic.
Yeah.
Kaz?
That's about all I got. I mean, stay classy, just don't be a dick, and generally people who work in computer shops can help you with information or certain pieces of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are some great shops, like Fry's, they're really friendly, they've got a lot of inventory, but they get so swamped it's hard to talk to them. Our good friends, he literally just sat with me for like almost an hour to his dad's dismay. Talking yeah. about the kind of build and how we can work this out. And I'm glad he told me to take a step back for a little bit and take a serious look at it. Because then real life hit me and I was broke quickly.
Well, it's like I told you when I went into his shop, you know, I gave him my price point.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul is an awesome guy when it comes to building computers. He's pretty much a savant at it. And he loves building computers. And he keeps showing me all these new components and all this cool stuff. And explaining how it ramps my computer up just that few millimeters more. And, of course, a couple of times I'm like, oh, swap out for that. And eventually he's like, well, you did set this for your budget. And I'm like, wait, the guy who's making money from me is actually telling me to do things that are detrimental to making money, but keeping me within my price point? That was actually really legit on his part.
And it keeps you as a long-term customer.
It does. It does. It definitely kept me as a long-term customer, and I'm definitely, yeah, going back. As long as he has his doors open.
And even afterwards, I still say we invite him to a barbecue. Amen, Dad.
Yeah. I don't know if his dad will show. He'll probably just sit around being pissed that we're talking to his son all the time.
All right. Well, I'm out of other things to say.
Yeah, it's pretty much me, dude.
Blasphemous, was this useful to you?
Yeah, it works for me. I mean, just talking about it to other gamers, you know, I'm not the biggest PC guy, but I want to have something that'll work, and I want to be able to do the editing again. Because last time I tried, my computer shut off, so I'm working with an old pre-built POS, but it was free for my friend, so...
Well, then you got what you paid for.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to take a break and be back in a few minutes, guys.
Au revoir.
Stay tuned.
Are you ready?
Welcome to the second half of our podcast, where I'm going to try, with all due favor, not to lose my temper.
Oh, come on, we're not talking about EA.
God damn it, motherfucker.
Whatever dark thoughts make you happy, focus.
Okay. Halfling, anti-paladin, childlike, pass for human, foul mouth. Not EA. Oh my god, dude. Okay, so what we're talking about is Paizo's Pathfinder 2.0. We didn't mention this at our intro because, well, we're lazy and we just made this shit up while we were on break.
Well, part of that, and we also had some long conversation last night, and some words were exchanged, some people vented, and I had to clean it off the ceiling.
Okay, to put it short and sweet, Pathfinder 2.0 pisses me off. Alright? It pisses me off. And not the good kind of pissed off where I'm like at a fetish club. Where I got some hot, you know, 9 out of 10 showing me the joys of water sports. Kind of pissed off. Though I have not yet engaged in that activity, but my Epicurean nature says, why not? So, my big problem of this fucking... goddamn shit show. Is there fucking us? Oh, and sidetrack, speaking of shit shows, Wizards of the Coast is losing fuck tons of money this last quarter. Their reports show that they have fucked up hardcore.
Mm-hmm.
Unsurprisingly, called it. Anyway, Paizo 2.0, they're pretty much doing the same thing in a way, because both topics kind of segue into each other, sort of, kind of. Because 3.0 came out back around 99 or so, and it was great. It was fucking phenomenal. It was an awesome idea. It brought us all back into role playing instead of ROLL or LOL. The old 2.0 D&D system, Advanced D&D, was awesome in its own right, but it was still more strategically based. You really didn't do much role-playing except based off of your core attributes. Your skills kind of sucked. And 3.0 really expanded on that. And then they brought out the OGL.
Mm-hmm.
And the OGL was abused, kidnapped, sold into slavery, abused some more, and then released back to the public, only to face public abuse. I mean, there were so many publishers publishing OGL content and material.
It got out of hand.
It got so out of hand that the people who made the game, Wizards of the Coast, were losing money. I mean, but it was... sure, it sucked on some standards, but on the others, it really brought the gaming community into the light. You know, people were just coming up with all sorts of crazy shit, and new modules and new races and all sorts of crazy shit. It was just, wow. Of course, 3.0 was a fucking hot mess. So they came out with 3.5 to try to clean the hot mess, which they did fix a few things. Broke a few others, but 3.5 only came out a few years after 3.0. Fortunately, you know, they did leave in some of the rule set stuff, so you could easily translate from one to the other, and you didn't have to go crazy buying new source material.
Mm-hmm.
And Pathfinder came out using the OGL and being really meticulously careful, and their version of D&D 3.75, as they first marketed it,
this was after 4.0 came out, just to be clear for those of you who aren't aware of this.
No, 4.0. No, Pathfinder came out before 4.0.
Really?
Yes. Yes. Pathfinder came out before, long before 4.0.
Hmm.
If I remember right.
Well.
Dude, you're looking at a guy who's starting to develop memory problems from age, okay? Anyhow.
That's A-G-E.
And we shouldn't even mention 4.0, the EA of role-playing games, because that was just worthless.
It made a great board game, and there are several good ones of that.
If I wanted to play an MMO, I have many on my computer already. I don't need to fill out a character sheet and sit down at a table to play an MMO.
Right.
So anyway, however, Pathfinder, you know, abides by the OGL rules and makes a superior product compared to Wizards of the Coast, and they had a lot of really good selling points on that and everything. And, of course, 4.0 came out not long after 3.5 was out, only a few years. And now D&D 5.0 is out, and more or less as an apology for 4.0.
Yep.
The thing that I have a problem with is the price of books have gone up over the course of 20 years. Not too hardcore. They've gone up. I mean, like...
they've been subject to... to the inflation of money.
Yeah, they've been subject to the inflation. The first vampire books I bought were $30 a pop for the hardcovers, which, you know, to a teenager with a part-time job, then it was pricey, but doable.
Right.
But now, you know, and especially with D&D, all the D&D books have gone by a formula that there's the player's guide, the GM's guide, and the first monster manual, and those are the three primary books you need to play. That's been pretty much the predominant formula they have followed for decades. So with D&D 5.0 or even Pathfinder 2.0, if I got that right, I don't know, brain hurt. Anyway, the fact of the matter is the books have gone up to closer to the category of $50 now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that means Pathfinder 2.0 has just come out and they're like, oh, we're fixing all these things. And what I'm saying on the other side of the fence is you shouldn't have fucked them in the first place. There should be a team of people in your writer staff who provide nothing more than oversight to make sure that there's no real big power creep, that everything stays lore, that the numbers are legitimate, that, you know, certain combos, you know, during playtesting might get nipped in the butt before they go to print. Because like I said, man, you know... True strike enchantments, the impenetrable armor, taking over fucking Tarrasques with the sorcerer, that kind of stuff should have had some oversight to it. And it really is hard when you keep coming out with new books and everything, but for me to jump into Paizo 2.0 right now is a minimum investment of $150.
Plus tax.
Plus tax. If you live in a state that has sales tax, which I think is all 50 of them at this point. I don't know. Things have changed a lot since the war.
Well, there's also, I can think of two states off the bat that don't allow a lot of stuff like this to be sold because they're Bible Belt or other religious related.
Oh, I miss the 80s, dude. I miss D&D book burnings. I was there. I'm old. I remember the churches handing out pamphlets on this shit. Dark Dungeons, the little chick book. No, this is the problem I have, though, is financially speaking. We've gone over this topic before in the past, and we'll revisit it in the future, that all you need to roleplay is imagination.
And some friends.
And some, well...
You, sometimes. There are certain situations...
Friends. I had those. So the goddamn Yankees marched over the border, came into Georgia, and killed all my friends.
Alright, Grand Cyclops.
Grand Cyclops! The Cyclops. Fuck you, you fucking troglodyte. Anyway, no, just looking at it from a financial aspect, I mean, especially with 5.0 having just come out recently, to stay current in the books is a hell of an investment when all you need to roleplay is just imagination and friends. You could always do your homebrew D&D game, just write out a bunch of shit on a piece of paper till it works.
Yeah, and, you know, for that, all you really need is just, yeah, like you said, imagination, and then some manner of adjudicating it for everyone.
Yeah. Pathfinder 2.0, the only way I can get excited about right now is totally pissing GMs off by weebing out and playing a fucking warlock. Because there's nothing more weeb than a warlock.
So, I got some real quick somewhat segues.
Okay.
One of which being my buddy Fat Matt's, hail to the fatty. He runs MX, and he's run it for... God, 20-some years. I think I was barely in school when he started this, and I hadn't met him until 5-6 years ago. He's been running that game pretty steadily, and he pretty much just wins it. You know, trying to explain to someone D&D after they've experienced, you know, just homebrew bullshit running, which is fun, is a bit difficult to people like, oh, there's so much math involved and blah, blah, blah. It's kind of how it goes when you're trying to say, oh, well, my dude's got... you know, experience doing this, so he should get a bonus on his roll. But me and Ned had to explain to one of our coworkers what D&D was, because we were standing at work, it was break time, and we were talking about it. And her friend was there, and was the new employee, and she was like, so what, is this like on a computer? How do you guys... And we're just talking about these epic fantasy things and these character designs. And then we had to explain to her, no, all you do is you sit down and you imagine this. Sometimes you have minifigs.
Theater of the mind.
Yeah, theater of the mind. But, yeah. You know, we were explaining that, no, we do all this awesome epic stuff. And all we do is sit down, drink some soda, you know, take a smoke break. But we just sit down and roll dice and imagine this stuff. And she completely was like, what? And I was like, you can come and sit in on one of our sessions and just check it out. But, you know, that's the great thing is it doesn't take a lot to do it. Like you're saying, just imagination and friends. When you bring out new additions and you change stuff, like my biggest gripe with 5e is the advantage-disadvantage. Yeah, it's kind of cool, but it really sucks when it's like, all right, you do this thing, and because of this, you get disadvantage. But I have this, which gives me advantage, so you're just rolling a die.
Yeah.
You can hardly add any numbers. Like, I don't mind doing extra math.
I think what I get where you're going with that, and I actually really like the advantage mechanic because it's to be used specifically for the really good and the really bad things. But I do think that what they should do is have some way to also give static mathematical bonuses or some variant thereof. I think that that should be a thing that they also add for some stuff that's less advantageous.
The only thing that I can see with new iterations having any real merit to them from a role-playing side is a lot of them are now veering away from the alignment spectrum.
Yeah.
And alignment has been probably the number one source of argument since the first Dungeons & Dragons book was sold publicly as people going, what the fuck, alignment? And I could make a fucking video, and I probably will in the future, about how people interpret alignment.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if I make two chaotic evil characters, by the rules, every GM looks at it, and their character, for some reason, most people look at chaotic evil, and they're like, oh, all that means is fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. I run around, I kill shit, and I act like a murder monkey until I stop living, which is
stupid.
Completely batshit dumb.
How could they even get past level 4 living like that?
I know.
How could they get to level 1?
Like, you could do a character whose concept is basically, they don't really care about other people.
Mm-hmm.
They get into combat because they want to challenge themselves. The weak die, the strong survive. That's the way the world works. That's a fairly chaotic, evil mindset to have. Somebody dies? Doesn't matter. They were weak. Whatever. They might not participate in a battle that's already taking place because that would tilt the scales, but they might instigate that battle to let the weak die so the strong will survive. Mm. That'd be a very chaotic mindset to have. Where on the other hand, you could have somebody who's more of like a gambler who constantly cheats, which is chaotic evil light. You know, they do some gambling, but they're a cheater. They're rigging the system in their favor. Yeah. You know, so they're being, you know, chaotic evil light. They're not running around being a fucking murder monster. And I haven't seen Pathfinder 2.0 in any real detail.
Mm-hmm.
And I know 5.0 is leaning away from it, so I know that a lot of the newer systems are leaning away from alignment because the alignments are so subject to interpretation. And a lot of people always go for balls of the wall, dial it to 11 interpretations. Lawful good will not do this or do this. And they take it like the lawful stupid levels.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's not how it goes.
Or, you
like, my favorite saying, lawful good does not mean lawful nice. You can be an asshole and still be lawful good. As long as your actions still continue to...
Oh, there was always, oh, God. No, he wants to talk, but, like, my brain hurts from just thinking about the neutral alignment.
Yeah.
True neutral. Everybody plays it like, I don't care, I just sit here a lump on a log.
Yeah.
Fuck!
Neutrality works.
I mean, I look at it like that Goblin Solo audio you did, where it was talking about alignment and how your alignment can change from various points along the day, but I really think the alignment thing comes from culturally. I think about when this game came out, everyone was big on, oh, the morality thing, right?
Yeah.
And now, with everyone being like, hey, you know, there's different interpretations, because guess what? We're all fucking different. Yeah, because then it really takes the, oh, well, your alignment is basically your moral compass. You know, it takes away that, because we realize that as people you can change and do things and think it's totally one way when it's viewed as this from another person.
Yeah,
so,
to take one of the most inflammatory subjects we have in human history is slavery. Every culture at some point or another has enslaved other peoples or is currently doing it. Fuck you, Nestle. And, you know, you go to Asian history, they have slavery. You go to Mediterranean history, there's slavery. You go to Celtic history, there's slavery. You go to Egyptian history, there's slavery. You go to South America, you got slavery. But at the same token, if we just pull, say, Greco-Roman history out, and you look at it, you're like, is this an evil society because they institute slavery?
Mm-hmm.
Is it? This is one of the most influential cultures in the world. In our modern history as we know it, our calendar, our mathematical system, modern philosophy, theater, all sorts of great things have come from ancient Greco-Roman cultures and societies. But when you look at it, are they lawful evil? Are they neutral evil? Are they chaotic evil? The glory of Rome, oh look, they're conquerors, they're evil?
Mm-hmm.
But culturally, if you were a Roman at the time, slavery would have just been another day.
Yeah.
It would have been the norm. Indentured servants, it would have just been the norm. And we were talking about this actually earlier today, the slave revolts, of how slaves were treated in Rome and whatnot. And after
Spartacus,
after the third revolt, you know, things got better for those who were in positions of slavery. They actually got retirement and whatnot because, well, the Roman Senate was like, well, if we keep treating them like assholes, they're going to come back and fuck us.
Again.
So... You know, you can't look at a society and just judge them off the basis of one thing. I mean, Rome, you know, you can look at them and go, oh, well, they instituted slavery, so they must be evil. But at the same token, you look at what they gave us as far as politics, philosophy, techniques of debate, engineering. You know, they contributed a lot to the world. So you can't just look at one aspect and say, oh, that they're evil.
Yeah.
Like, so alignment, when it's ported into D&D like that, you know, they're like, oh, well, all ogres are evil by default. Is it evil by my point of view or the ogre's point of view? Because the ogre culture is way different from mine.
Right, and another good example of this within the D&D world is orcs. Orcs, you know, an orcish culture includes honor duels. You, if an orc is, like, I know Goblin has mentioned this during his talks on evil. An orc, if an orc is slighted by another, he has the right, and will typically do, will challenge them to a duel to the death, because his honor has been slighted. And this was true in Japanese culture as well for a little bit, during their feudal ages, that the kind of the honor of the individual was more important than life and death for other people, to an extent, and a lot of it was how it was interacted.
Well, I mean, you bring up Japan, and one of the things that a samurai could do in ancient times, in antiquity, is they could kill an eta, a non-person, a common civilian. They could just walk up and be like, that person, I don't fucking like it, and strike them down. Most of the time they didn't do this because, well, there's a lot more non-people than there are samurai, mm-hmm. and non-people have a tendency to, you know, gather in large numbers and make life hell. So it didn't happen often, but at the same token, I don't see anybody condemning the society and culture of samurai because they had the capability of just killing people that they didn't even consider animals.
People romanticize it more than anything.
True of everything.
So, to segue back onto the topic, with Paizo 2.0, yes, I'm pissed about the price point. I'm pissed about if I want to stay within the current, I got to drop at least $150. On the other hand, though, I am excited that they're getting rid of certain rules that have been contentious for well over 30 years now.
And you should be really happy because they're putting your favorite race in as a core race.
Dude, my race was always a core race. It was just human superiority. It's the humanocracy.
No, remember, that has kept... elves rule the world.
We'll get into large-nosed elves rubbing their hands together. We'll get into that at another point, okay? We all know what the elves are really up to. But my race, okay, we have always been a core race. It's just the humans keeping us down.
And there we have...
Green lives matter.
And, you know...
And this is a perfect example of culture difference.
There is one thing. I have not heard wind about it yet. I know it's in D&D because we did it in a previous episode. I am actually curious if they're going to have gender fluid elves in Pathfinder 2.0 just so I can piss on that too.
And or if they're being smart and just being like, y'all are big kids. You can figure out a way.
You know what I would love to see though? Something that I have heard you and someone else and a lot of people go on and on about. How hard it is to be a true necromancer.
Yeah, just want to raise a family in peace.
Right?
Well, not just from the aspect of character build, but from trying to play a straight-up necromancer. Like, they got pretty close with the occult books for Pathfinder, which completely break the game regardless. I mean, you went off about my occultist.
The psychics and occultist books that they added in later on is another one of those problems that I have with the earlier incarnation of Pathfinder, and one of those things that they're trying to fix with a new Pathfinder, foolishly, is they allowed power creep. And the occult classes have a tremendous amount of power creep to them. Like, the shit your occultist was pulling off was way out of bounds compared to the base classes. And when Pathfinder was first written, what they did is they peeled away all of the spells and abilities and all the bullshit that goes on in the character, and they rebalanced them. They retooled them. So a level 15 monk and a level 15 wizard are about on the same fighting level. A level 15 rogue and a level 15 barbarian are pretty close to the same fighting level. They balanced the bar a lot better than they did in previous D&D things, because usually, like, a level 15 fighter had nothing on a level 15 wizard in previous D&D games because they needed gear to build themselves up. Pathfinder kind of did away with that a bit in the occult classes when they brought those in. I think they forgot about balancing them with the previous core professions. Yeah.
It seems, from what I'm hearing, it sounds a bit like they balanced it within the book, but not book to outside.
Yeah, they didn't balance it from book to book. They just kept the balance inside one book. And so when they produced another book, the balance was maintained in the next book, but it was still a greater power level than the previous book.
See, I see that, like, put it in a term I love to use, is like with magic. I really hate standard bannings because, and yes, I didn't live through the era of Cobblade, but still, you within a set, they build it to sell it as a single product. But when they have a system where it's like, all right, you get to mix it with these, there's going to be broken combos.
Oh yeah, Legacy format is so broken.
Yeah, turn zero. It basically whoever wins the die roll.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the... With Paizo 2.0, Looking at what I've seen of it so far, and it caught me by surprise, which was surprising.
Ta-da!
I'm looking at it, and I'm not really enthused. Mm-hmm. There are a few nice points about it, but when I compare it to my real life needs of, you know, role playing, I already have all the books I need from Pathfinder 1.0. I already have all the books I need from Dungeons & Dragons 3.5. And if I really want to go back into the crypt, I'm sure I might have a 2.0 book laying around somewhere.
You've got all the vampire books you need.
I got more than all the vampire books I need. Regardless, I have all the books I need, and a new iteration on a game that's already been published. Yes, it may be more mathematically balanced.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, if I jump right into the pool, all my Pathfinder 1.0 books now become obsolete for the most part. From that point on, if I'm playing Pathfinder 2.0, I have just negated hundreds upon hundreds of dollars worth of books to jump into a new iteration that may last about 4 to 5 years by the current cycle of releases. Which means by the time the bestiary, whatever the fuck they call them, by the time the fifth monster book comes out, they're going to have another iteration ready to roll out, and it's just going to negate all the previous books I bought. It's kind of like what we were talking about with computers, like a built-in kill switch.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, thanks for spending all your money. Now you're spending more money on the same product with a new rule set.
Yeah, but better.
But somehow better, yeah.
And you know, that segues into a really good point. Now, our main gripe has been buying the physical books.
Yeah.
So, what about buying the PDFs, or, God forbid, pirating the PDFs?
As our conversation went last night, and shit, I've given a lot of gamers shit over pirating PDFs because they had the financial means to buy the hard copy. They had the financial means to support the company that creates the game that they're playing. Those that don't have the financial means, like, I don't know, they're spending money to keep their kids' mouth fed, or put their kid through, you know, school with proper, you know, clothing on their back.
Or they're stuck pulling unemployment because they can't find a job.
Yeah, they're stuck pulling unemployment or SSI. Personally, I give leeway to that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, real life comes first. And, you know, if your secondary addiction is gaming and the best you can do is go to a pirate site and pirate the PDFs, I'm not going to narc. I'm going to be slightly, possibly a little irritated, but understanding of the situation. I've been fucking dirt-ass poor. I know that real life has a way of just muscle-fucking you. But if you have the financial means to support the company for the game that you're enjoying,
do it.
Do it. That means they can continue making money to produce material for the game that you enjoy. That means their employees get to keep eating food.
Their families get to keep eating food.
Yeah, their families get to keep eating food.
They get to keep producing more fun stuff.
They get to keep producing more books and material. You know, and when it comes down to just about anything in our very capitalistic society here in America, the strongest way you can voice or make a vote is with your wallet. And if you're pirating shit, you're basically voting no to something you enjoy. It's bullshit.
Don't do it.
Don't do it. You know,
if it can be avoided, you should. If you can afford it, you should pay for it. And like, mm-hmm. And if that means buying the PDF, like,
buying the PDF is another ball of beans for me.
I mean, because then it's just, what, 10, 20 bucks for the PDF?
Yeah, but buying the PDF, like I said, it's another ball of beans, because I fucking goddamn motherfucking hate people pulling fucking electronics out at my fucking game table and fucking staring at a fucking phone or tablet or a computer screen when they should be looking at the goddamn battle map. Read the PDFs at home. I have physical copies. I buy them to share.
Yeah, and like on the other side of it, you know, with the PDFs... You can print them out. Do what Thoric does.
Oh, yeah.
Print out the pages that are relevant to your character. You don't need the whole book.
Another thing to go on with that, if you try to get them, say you buy the PDF, but you want to have a physical copy, you just can't swing it, and you go, say, to a professional print shop because you want to actually, like, get them done right, a lot of places won't do it because they got that little copyright symbol on it.
Number one, they won't do it because it's got the copyright symbol on it. And number two, if you go to a professional print shop that will do it, or you know somebody behind the counter who will sneak it through, you're going to be charged more money than actually buying the book itself.
Exactly. And if you do it from home, you got to think about it. That's going to be a lot of ink. Are you going to do it in color? Because these books are in color.
Yeah.
You know, and what if something doesn't print right? What if you your pages shift, and all of a sudden it's like, well, I'm missing half the phrasing on this spell. I'm going to have to print this page again.
I believe the first core rulebook to Pathfinder is pushing close to 350 pages. And at best, and like if I were to try to print out a PDF, my printer would print 50 pages for $40. If I'm lucky. And it's not even... Yeah.
It eats toner, I swear to God.
It eats toner like a motherfucker. But still... You know, just by that math, 50 pages out of 350 for $40, I'm better off just buying the book. But if I go the PDF route, to be polite to the other gamers and the GM, is I just print out the necessary information I need at the game table. And this is, of course, me personally speaking, because as a GM, when I see somebody pull out a tablet, laptop, phone, or whatever, and they're scanning through PDFs, for all I know, they're playing Angry Birds.
And we've caught people doing that around.
And we've caught people doing that. I've caught you doing that. Not Angry Birds, but a space game. And it's insulting to the GM because a GM spends a lot of time in the background crafting all this shit together, and to be ignored in their own game space, it hurts. So
it's asinine. Just don't do it.
Yeah. Anyway, Paizo 2.0, we're nearing the 1 hour mark, and our listeners should be able to run away now, so... My final thoughts on Paizo 2.0 is to give it time and keep your money in your pocket and listen to people who've delved into it to get their a more informed review. Because I personally, I don't have the inclination to try it.
You know, here's what I got to say on it for final thoughts, and then Kaz or Ken gets last word.
Who do you get it twice with?
Yeah. If you're going to go and worry about buying a bunch of books, to be honest... Just get your core rule books. If you need the other stuff, look it up online. PFSRD is a great website, but you've got to make sure that it falls within the criteria. Because they got a whole bunch of stuff up there that's also not in books. Or it's in an adventure path, where you got to go make sure that still works. But really, if I were to do it, like, I would just buy D&Dizzle or one of the other attention span game products, because their stuff's more reasonably priced. It may not be the... mainstream game, but I just finished reading through the first book of Carmine, and I want to run that one day. I need to go over it a few more times before I talk to the creator, because I've got questions. But, you know, go for something you can afford, and don't pirate. Please don't. There's free websites to use, and you can print off the pages, but you don't need to go steal stuff yet.
Yeah, and, like, you know, I guess now it's my mock. The thing is, like, for most people, unless you are actually planning on doing the dungeon or the game master job, you don't need more than the core book to start. You just need the core book and someone else who has that book. And it doesn't really matter beyond that, because that means that they've invested the money. And that's not relevant to this discussion. It's just being willing to try. And, like, for that $150 investment like Goblin's talking about, I can sit 8 people down and we can all enjoy the game together. So, you don't... Not everyone needs to own copies, but at the same time, if you do have copies, you should be paying for them.
Support your local game stores, too, because they carry that stuff. It sits on their shelves until you buy it, and they will be more than happy to possibly work out deals with you. They got you.
Books are meant to be read, not burned.
Yeah, actually.
Right on, guys. Well, we got stuff to do and get some editing done. Hope you enjoyed it. Come on back to us. This is Blasphemous, signing off.
Game Goblin, gonna go roll some dice.
The dragon soars. And don't forget to give us likes, subscribes, and all that jazz. We're gonna actually start getting into...
We're adding the customary end of podcast blowjob.
The begging.
Well, the begging also helps spread our name. Like the plague it must be.
Okay, fine. Like, comment, subscribe, and if you can find our email address, send me a picture of boobs, and I will give you a shout-out in our podcast.
Later, guys.
Later.